When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to Islanders Anxiety from Lighthouse Hockey and the Fans First Sports Network. My name is Dan Saracini. Joining me this Sunday evening via Zencaster, as always, is my good friend Michael Leboff. And Mike, this might be a divisive episode because the Islanders are on a five-game point streak, if you can believe it. But the way they have accumulated those 5 points has been infuriating, frustrating, disappointing. I don't know. A lot of other adjectives that had me shouting things at the TV, not once, but twice this week, really 3 times, but at least the second game they won. But man, I can't believe we watched 2 games this week that were almost carbon copies of one another in the worst way possible. And so this is going to be a spicy one, I think.
Yeah. I'm just kind of sick of doing this and saying, and like trying to calm myself down by saying, okay, if you woke up on Monday morning and I said, right, hey, Mike, you're going to get 4 points out of six. The Islanders are going to get 4 out of 6 points this week. Do you care how they get them? I would say, no, absolutely not. Am I crazy? Like,
right.
I'll take 4 out of 6 points right. in a three-game week. Mm. But in the moments, it's tough. To those last 4.5 minutes of the Hurricanes game felt like an eternity. I will say, like, you do take a, when you take a step back and you look at the standings, the Islanders are 4 points behind the first place Rangers in the Metro, and the Rangers have a game in hand. They have a better points percentage than the Hurricanes. They have a better points percentage than the Lightning, the Red Wings, the Maple Leafs. Like, they've got tied for the third best points percentage in the Eastern Conference. Like, these are good things. And
yeah. They're seventh in the league in goals against too. Like, they're,
yeah. Like, right, like, the top, yeah. So there's good, yeah. There's good things to talk. Like, there's good things going on. And that's important to say. This is, we're, we try really hard not to be a you know, fire Lou, fire Lane, do this, do that, even though things are going well. Podcast. That said, they're making it so hard on us. And I also want to say, I think they haven't really been catching many of the breaks. They've definitely catching breaks in terms of goaltending, and that the Capitals game, they caught a ton of breaks. But I mean, the officiating, I think, in both the Red Wings game and the Hurricanes game went the other way. How about this? Not only have we played like basically every game this season missing somebody, the season opener was the only one.
That's a good point. Yeah.
We have been on who is skating in practice watch since day one of training camp with Palmieri. Like, there hasn't been a day where we could just relax and just assume everybody's healthy. Because even before the season opener, like, there was some kind of consternation of whether Palmieri, with his one preseason game, was going to be good to go.
Yeah.
Right? So this team has been on line rush watch since day one of training camp, and it has continued with Adam Pellick, who is obviously a massive loss, even though he's played the last like five or six games of this season like a stressed out med student. He's very fidgety and like lashing out at people, and you're like, dude, it's okay, like, we get you're going through tough times, but it's not it's not Tage Thompson's fault. You didn't need to run him because he didn't have the puck and take the penalty and take yourself out of the play. All of this is to say, yeah, it's a very confusing time to be optimistic.
No, that's a good way to put it. And that's a much better title for this episode than what I was going to come up with, which is they're playing like assholes. These guys are playing like assholes. And I think it's okay to say that. It's okay to say that, especially this week, they played like assholes. They did. I know they collected 5 points, you know, whatever it was, 4 points out of these four games. Like, we get that. But you can still say that they played like assholes, because they did in all three games. They won one of them because their goalie stood on his head, and the other team just shot blanks because they're having an abysmal start to the season themselves. But in the other two games, I mean, they blew multi-goal leads in the same, you know, in the same fashion. And it was just, like I said, off the top, infuriating. Frustrating and just awful. And yeah, I mean, a confusing time to be optimistic is a great way to put it, because on one hand, you know, they are collecting points, which, you know, is not something they've always done, but it's also the way they're collecting points is terrible. Before we dive too deep into it, reminder that we are on Patreon at patreon.com/islandersanxiety. You can get ad-free episodes of this show, plus bonus podcasts, written posts, and all kinds of extra stuff. So sign up today, patreon.com/islandersanxiety. You won't regret it. We always have fun stuff going on there. Do we want to talk about the Washington game first to kind of get that out of the way, and then talk about Detroit and Carolina?
Because I guess you could put the other two together.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
I will say that that whole day before the Washington game, I couldn't even picture an Islander win.
Yeah.
I had no hopes that they were going to do it, because I was at the Red Wings game, and I was walking out of the building with my dad, and I was, you know, kind of ticked, but at the same time thinking, you know, I'm happy we got a point. They obviously salvaged a point, but I won't know how I feel about this game until after that Washington game, because it's either 1 point out of four, 2 points out of four, 3 points out of four, depending on how it goes. And I had zero hope that the Islanders were going to get anything out of that Capitals game. And I do chalk it up to PTSD, like we talked about last episode, from that game in Washington against a corpse team last year.
Yeah, true. So the Washington game, well, first of all, we need to, before we go talking about the game, we have to talk about the momentous thing that happened before the game, which was that Thomas Hickey stepped in on color commentary, and Corey Schneider joined Shannon Hogan during the intermissions. Hickey is like unfair. This guy shows up on waivers, whatever it was, 6-7 years ago, immediately becomes a top four defenseman for the Islanders and is that way for the next however many years. And here comes Schneider. And now, then he steps into this television role. And after a couple of kind of, you know, somewhat little bit bumpy here and there in the beginning, now he's just like, oh, sweet, Thomas Hickey's here. Like, he's just awesome. He's fantastic at this.
It actually ticked me off how good he was.
Yeah.
During the broadcast, because he made a point. Like I noticed something with Romanov and Pulak. I'm like, they must have just got their wires crossed there. Like, yeah. It ended up being a on man rush or an easy breakout pass for the Capitals. And all I was thinking was, damn, like that, you know, that was a miscommunication. I don't know what was going on there, because the two of them have just been in sync forever. And then come back from a commercial break, and there's Hickey explaining that, you know, Romanov's, you know, he's on his offhand here, so he's trying to get over to that side, and they're trying to figure out the right time to switch, and they just called for it at the wrong time. Like, I've been in that situation a million, and I was like, God damn it, Tom. You know, save some for the rest of us, please.
Yeah. Yeah, he's great.
God, we love Butch so much, and I kind of miss him. I this is going to sound weird, but I almost prefer Butch on color compared to someone like as buttoned up as Hickey. I love having Hickey as like the third man in, because the ride with Butch is so much fun. Like, you just, he's so always so close to getting himself into serious trouble. And it's just fun. Yeah. You know, like, how is he going to pronounce Michael Rasmussen's name or Nedeljkovic or whatever? Like, fun to go through that ride.
He had a Kotkaniemi that wasn't close. Like, let's just put it, I don't remember what it was, but it was not definitely Kotkaniemi. That's a tough one. I'll give him credit for that, but
yeah,
that was a tough
one. I love him so much.
Me too.
And you wonder what it does to Brendan, because I do think Brendan is someone who he's impressed with his own cufflinks, that kind of guy, I feel like. So he's a calls a great game, but he does seem to have a little bit of an inflated ego for whatever reason. So, like, you do wonder, like, having Thomas in the booth, was he excited, or like, God damn, there's someone who's better than me in here or whatever.
Well, they're doing two different jobs. So, but it's definitely different.
I like to imagine these things in my head, though. Like,
right. Oh yeah, for sure. But yeah, Hickey was great. Definitely, you know, added to the broadcast. I immediately thought, oh, please don't let TNT or ESPN snap this guy because we need him here. But Corey Schneider did a good job, I thought, on intermissions. He worked with Shannon very well. It was nice to see him there. And I got to tell you, this guy's hair is astonishing. I would kill for this guy's hair. It's not only is it like the color is fantastic, the dark red, but man, it's like thick. I don't understand. It's crazy. It's like he's like a cartoon character. And I'm like, this guy's hair has been under goalie helmets all this time. That's insane. That's unfortunate for the rest of us to not have like been able to kind of enjoy this head of hair, but he's more than a head of hair. He did a great job. So
And, you know, just we've talked so often about this Lou tactic where he just doesn't let you leave. Like, Corey Schneider is not a New York Islander in most people's minds.
Right.
There, when people find out, if they turn on like ESPN Plus or whatever, from Seattle or Minnesota, and they're like, who is the third person on this broadcast? I don't know idea. Like, Corey Schneider, why is Corey Schneider on the Islanders broadcast? Right. Like, that's quite strange. That's like having like Alex Ald on the on like the Ottawa Senators or something. Right. Like, you just don't think of these guys as, you would never think of Corey Schneider as an Islander.
Right.
But he did a great job. And we love Shannon too. But Shannon is very much she reminds me a lot of times of like a local news reporter who's reporting from like a carnival or like a very great, like a happy go lucky event in a town, like in a small town, like a Friday Night Lights football game. The whole town's out here, like that kind of thing. and to have, that be your partner, like she's definitely unique in like the way she broadcast a game. I don't know how many personalities like that Corey Schneider's dealt with in his hockey playing career, but they kind of mixed well. It was fun to watch.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm looking forward to more probably during the road stuff, but
something that we did our super specific predictions before the season. God, it would have taken us years to come to Corey Schneider's going to be on the Islander broadcast.
Well, he was going to, they even mentioned this, like, you were going to go play in Europe. He's like, we had some offers, but, you know, I mean, he's probably got little kids. Like, I don't think he wants to spend a year in Davos or whatever playing over there. But, we definitely would not have guessed this. But again, I'm looking forward to see where it goes. And I have a feeling that as long as Butch and Jigs get to do their game from Winnipeg every year, it's all good, right? I look forward to seeing that too. Every year, the Winnipeg trip, I feel like Brendan is like, Jigs wants to go to Winnipeg. God bless. Go to Winnipeg. Be my guest. I'll stay here. But in any event, so that was a cool surprise. And like you said, my feeling going into this game, we'll talk about the Detroit game in a little bit. My feeling going into this game was also very pessimistic. I was like, oh, great. How's this going to work out? And they ended up leaving with a 3-0 win. And the star of the show was Semyon Varlamov, who made 32 saves, often spectacular ones. The shots in the game ended up being 32-21 in favor of the Caps. But that does not tell the whole story. The Caps spent the majority of the first period in the Islanders zone. They spent most of the second period in the Islanders zone. The third period, things evened out. The Islanders actually showed up and kept them from getting too close in there, making, you know, getting a goal here and then starting to chip away. The Caps kind of shot blanks all night. And frankly, it was not Darcy Kemper's night, to be blunt. He gave up a goal to Ryan Pulock 22 seconds into the game. And I thought to myself, man, when was the last time the Islanders scored a goal, you know, right off the hop, like 20 some odd seconds in, 20, even 30 seconds into the game? And they said that in the, you know, 1,000 whatever games that the Islanders have played, that's happened 8 times where they've scored inside of, you know, 30 seconds. And I'm like, yeah, 8 times. And probably the 7th time was in, you know, 1991 or something like that. Like, I don't remember, especially in this era, that this almost never happens. But they took the lead early. They kind of kept the Caps at, you know, the Caps kept trying to get something in the first period. It didn't happen. Varlamov was great. Hudson Fashing and Thomas Simon Holmstrom scored a beautiful 2-on-1. We're going to talk a lot about Holmstrom in a little bit too. And they got 2 goals on 2 shots on goal, which is like, what? Like, Darcy Kemper's save percentage was 0. The Islanders' shooting percentage was 1,000. The second period just was more the same. And Brock Nelson got loose, scored in tight, his 5th goal of the season. And again, they played pretty well in the third, I thought. But this was the Varley show. He earned it. He was fantastic. This is Islanders' second shutout of the year. But this was a troubling thing because the Caps tried and tried and tried, and they had a ton of shots go wide, over, get blocked. TJ Oshie thought he had a goal scored, and then he got called back as a goaltender interference. And on one hand, it's like, you know, LOL Caps. But on the other hand, you're just like, man, why did it take you guys 2 periods to show up and actually, like, play a normal period of hockey? And why would you do that to Varley? I don't understand why you would do that to this poor man is out here standing on his head. What are you doing to him? He was fantastic. The rest of them, though, it took him 40 minutes to show up, and they walked out with a 3-0 win. So it's kind of a weird one, but we'll take that for sure.
Yes. They get that early goal, and it almost like it threw them off of their game.
what is this?
Like, yeah, like
first period.
And I think there's a lot to be said, obviously, for Varlamov, but there was a game last year, and I don't remember who the opponent was, where the Islanders played a really good game, and they had a ton of shot attempts, but they just couldn't hit the net. Do you remember that at all, vaguely? Like, they kept shooting wide or getting shots blocked, and I don't remember the opponent at all, but it was like the general kind of consensus after the game was, hey, they played well. They just couldn't hit the backside of the barn. And, you know, we'll see if they can kind of build on that from there. Mm. And that's what it felt like for the Capitals. Like, they just shots were getting blocked. Sticks were blowing up. Varlamov was fabulous. And I do think, so on one hand, the Islanders didn't play well because they just couldn't sustain anything on the offensive zone through the first 40 minutes. On the other hand, I thought the defensemen individually were good. Like, they were getting in the way. It was very much last ditch, and Adam Pellick was hurt. So,
yes.
Pellick goes down 5 minutes into the game.
Something like that, yeah. He was favoring his hip, and he skated off, and it was not good. Because he had just come back.
It was just the game just started so strange with the goals and then him getting hurt across the river. Like, Anna Fox got hurt almost simultaneously as Pellick. Basically, like, it was almost like, oh yeah, if we're gonna take a Ranger, we're gonna also have to take an Islander. We can't just do that. And they also took Jack Hughes like the next night. So there's just been some big injuries around the metro area. But I thought, like, Pulock, Romanov, Aho, and Mayfield were all pretty good. Bolduc, I have no idea. I don't even remember him playing. So, which I guess is a good thing for where he's at in his career right now. But I thought those guys individually were pretty good and deserve a little bit of credit for just making it hard to get stuff through. And that last ditch defending, because they were getting no support from the forwards. Like they must have been absolutely, Varley obviously had to have been gassed by the end of the night, but the defensemen too, they were running around all night and they were having to log long shifts because they couldn't get the puck out. The forwards just couldn't get a forecheck going and like give these guys a break until the third period. It was a weird night because it felt like when you win that kind of game where you're outplayed for the most part, the other team probably deserves it. You usually win like 3-2 or something, you know, not 3-0. Like it was very strange one and made me feel better about the Red Wings game just because, all right, now we're up 3 points out of possible 4. We're going into the toughest opponent of the week on Saturday. And like the things that need to work, like for this team that the Islanders absolutely need the goaltending to be almost near or at the top of the league to have any hope in succeeding this season. And we should never apologize for that. We've kind of been conditioned by the hockey media and the hockey culture right now to almost feel guilty about having good goalies.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't. The Islanders deserve to have these goaltenders because one was drafted and developed and the other one they traded or they signed as a free agent a few years ago and they've re-signed him. And this is obviously a plan and it's one that's working out. And I think like the league is in such a strange place with goaltending. There's just not many good goalies in the league that having two, it's almost people are looking at us like these like greedy, let them eat cake kind of people. Right. Like,
right. Yeah.
You guys really need both these guys. Like you can't give the Oilers one.
Yeah.
Right. You know, poor Tristan Jarry over there because his GM thinks that goaltending is black magic. Mm. You can't just loan Varlamov to the Penguins. Help Dubas out.
Yeah. No.
So we shouldn't like feel like the Islanders are going to win games because their goalie stayed on their head. They're going to win a lot of games like that. So I don't feel bad about it. Mm. I did feel that they should have played better though as a unit.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't feel bad about it at all. I just want them to get some help. Like they shouldn't have to do it that way. And by the way, this was also a great game for the crew that, when Varley, you know, when it was looking like the Islanders were going to miss the playoffs a couple of years ago, why don't they trade Varlamov? They don't need both of these guys. You know, Sorokin
wouldn't you just
is so
like
good.
David Riddick like, to be in there for 20 games?
Yeah. they might be able to get, you know, a third line forward or something for him that could really go. No, this is why you keep the guy, right?
Yeah.
Because nobody else has this kind of luxury where you can just suck and still win a game by shutout.
two years ago, they talked about like the goaltending market being two free agency classes ago being there were some goalies out there that just couldn't find a gig because everyone kind of felt they had their goaltending situated. And now it's almost the opposite where goaltenders are like having great quarterbacks. You're just not, why would you give them up? Like why would the Islanders ever give up either of these guys until they prove themselves not to be good when there's a team out in Edmonton that has two really bad goalies right now, like completely tanking their season. Yeah. The Leafs are in trouble because of it. Like these are good teams or supposedly good teams, Pittsburgh, Toronto, Edmonton, even Calgary to some extent who are, the Lightning have Vasilevsky hurt. Like they could get tanked because they don't have, better insurance and goaltending. I mean, the Hurricanes too, they've got three guys and until, the past week, like none of them started to take ownership. The Canucks last year couldn't get a save. The Blue Jackets. Why on earth would the Islanders ever abandon this ship right now with the way the league's at? When scoring's up, it's so hard to be a goalie right now, harder than maybe it's been since the 80s. And we've got the best tandem and people are trying to make us feel that we're like circumventing the cap. By having these two guys almost like you're not supposed to win that way. The process is not right.
Right.
What's the difference between having your best player as a goalie and you know, Austin Matthews? Right. Oh, you guys got a great goal scorer. We got the guy who does the opposite. Yeah. Why is it what we're doing wrong?
Well, the problem is their models haven't figured out how to do goalies yet. So that's why they can't figure them out. So, but that's a problem for another day. But yeah, that was the Varley show. And thank God, because he killed it. Actually, I misspoke before. That was his second shutout of the year, and the Islanders' third. He had a shutout in Columbus, too. And they mentioned, actually, the Islanders actually got a mention on 32 Thoughts when somebody said, imagine your backup gets two shutouts. Like, that, you're doing pretty well in the goaltending department, right? So that's pretty good. However, the game's bookending, that Capitals game, were a very different story altogether. So Tuesday night against the Detroit Red Wings, the Islanders lost 4-3 in overtime. They had a two-goal lead, another shorthanded goal, by this time by Casey Cizikas, and then Nelson tipped a Noah Dobson shot, and they were playing great. I thought they were great. Through the half of the game, the Islanders had control. Detroit didn't really have much of a sniff, you know, of much. Cal Clutterbuck did get a 10-minute misconduct for barking at the refs for a missed icing. Not the last time the refs have become part of the story. But then about halfway through the game, the Red Wings come alive. Jake Walman Daniel Sprong scores, and then Aho and Balduk misplay. Jake Walman ties the game. JT Compher basically scores into an open net. And in 4 minutes, the Red Wings have gone from being down 2-0 to being up 3-2. Bo Horvat scored late in the third from the slot on the power play. Beautiful power play goal to tie it. And they go to overtime. And Horvat, who looked like the hero a minute earlier, turns the puck over at the blue line. And Lucas Raymond scores on a nice pass. I mean, it was a 2-on-1 with JT Compher. And again, Sorokin was fantastic. He's the only guy who is not culpable in any of this. He made 32 saves. Billy Husso was pretty good. He made 36 of his own. The Islanders led in shots, and they were very good until they stopped playing. And it was like, what are you guys doing? You're up 2-0 going into the third. What are you doing? Why did you just stop playing and you let the Red Wings just sort of take the game over? And I was telling a friend of mine the next day at work, he's a Red Wings fan. I said, no offense, but like, I don't think the Red Wings won that game so much as the Islanders just gave it to them. Like, I don't understand why. And this, again, this wouldn't be the first time I would think this. Why are they playing like assholes? Why are you doing this? And it's a frustrating thing. It's not the first time the Islanders have done this. We'll talk about that in a minute. But, I mean, you were at this game. And as you said, I mean, you obviously didn't know what was going to happen a few nights later against Carolina. But like you're saying that you actually felt a little bit kind of uplifted despite kind of blowing a game that you had won in the third period, basically.
And I think this is a theme for both these games, is that I do think that last year's team at this junction of the season, so pre-Horvat and Engvall, loses that game in regulation.
Yeah, it's probably true.
They probably lose by two goals.
Like both those better for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's, and I think that the addition of Horvat and Engvall to a lesser extent, the emergence of Holmstrom as a bona fide like NHL contributor has raised the floor of this team considerably, where even when they are playing like assholes, they can still salvage something. And one of the things that why I was so happy was they scored that power play goal. How many times last year did we say it's not even like the abysmal meager percentage that they're clipping at this season? It's that when they get the chance on the power play late in the game to tie a game or to go ahead, they just would absolutely puke all over themselves. Then this time, I mean, that was their best looking power play. I can't even remember how long when have you seen a play like that?
Yeah. The power play has looked better. Scoring better, obviously. It's not great, but it looks a hell of a lot better than it did last year.
I mean, that play, that's a play like you'll be watching a game on ESPN Plus or Center Ice. You'll be watching like the Lightning and say, when have the Islanders ever been able to pull something off like
right.
that? When's the last time? Maybe with Thomas Vanek?
Yeah.
And that was why I kind of walked out of there feeling okay. Like they did score that big power play goal. They got a point after falling behind, and they squandered that lead. Generally, I thought they played fine until that junction when they just gave the game away, and I was just much more encouraged and discouraged, and, except for that little blip. And like you said, I don't know at this time the context of this game and what's to come on Saturday. It's kind of like when people in history make decisions, like the masses, and right. you're like, yeah, well, they don't know what's coming in, World War II. Like, they don't understand 20 years from now what like they're walking into and why they're following these people. Like, they just don't have that context. So I didn't have the context of that the island, like, I'm walking out of UBS Arena thinking, that was good. I'm glad we got a point out of that. But I also know that we're going to do this again. Like, we're going to make the same mistake. Like, I just don't have the context at the time past me.
Yeah.
So I'm okay with it. And I do think that Horvat, so there was talk about the Islanders' record on Dirty Two Thoughts since Horvat came back. And I think that the big thing that he's brought to the team is, like, there's a lot less guesswork.
Yeah.
With the Islanders, when with him on the team, like, we're not trying to figure out, okay, we just got to ride the hot hand or hope we catch lightning in a bottle with Matt Barzell and Austin Czarnik, who was on the ice for the Red Wings. Like,
right.
They're not guessing at who can be on that top line anymore. It's those two guys and then a third person, and you really only need two to drive a line, so it's a lot less difficult to figure out. So just his presence really makes a huge, huge difference. And it showed in that power play goal. That being said, yeah, you walk out of there, then they get the 2 points against the Capitals. So I'm feeling even a little bit better about the game against Detroit, waking up on Friday morning and going to the game on Saturday. And then all sorts of confusion was just heaped on me by the Hurricanes.
Yeah, this one, I was so angry after that Red Wings game. I was so mad because I was watching, my wife was next to me, and she was like asleep, and I just kept getting angrier and angrier. And every single time they scored, I was getting madder and madder because the Islanders just didn't do anything to stop them. Like, they just let these guys walk in and take the game. And then, like the comfort play, he was just standing by himself, just by the open net. And I was just like, what are you doing? Do they know what is going on right now? And then when Raymond scored, he was smiling and he was excited, and I'm sure he was happy, but I could have strangled him. Like, I was so angry that I was just like, I hate this. I hate when they do this, you know?
The 3-on-3 is a joke.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's a conversation for another time. Cause when we'll get to it, because this team is worthless. And I mean, now the new power play is overtime. Like, this team goes overtime, they're going to lose. They're just going to lose. So here's, Detroit, it's a terrible thing. You think to yourself, all right, listen, that's going to happen to you. It happens to everybody. They're going to talk it out and go over the tape and figure out what happened. And they'll have, hopefully discuss it and talk about it. And then Thursday's the game against the Caps happened, and they win it. And again, they didn't play well, but it was a different kind of game. And Varley was great. So, okay, whatever. And then here comes a game on Carolina. Now, Carolina obviously is not off to the season that they wanted to. Not nearly as bad as people might make it sound, but just not really out there doing the things that they normally do. Their goalies aren't very good this year. Freddie Anderson's hurt. Go figure. And Antti Raanta's numbers are terrible. And obviously you have the extra juice of the playoff series from a year ago. By the way, happy retirement, Paul Stastny. You believe this guy? He eliminates the Islanders and then is just like, all right, I'm out of here. Like, go screw you, Paul Stastny. Get lost. Anyway. Nice career. I thought, again, this was a very, very similar to the Detroit game. I thought they were pretty even for the most part in the first period. Noah Dobson, who continues his resurgent social media free career, is having an extraordinary season. And this has to be the nicest goal of his career. That drag and shoot from the slot was beautiful. I jumped out of my seat. I was like, oh, like I couldn't get, I was like Butch at that point, beautiful, beautiful goal. And it's just the visions of what could be, not just for that game, but forever, just pop in your head and like, man, if this guy's going to do stuff like this, that was like prime Erik Karlsson type goal. Like, that's just like, nobody else does that. And he just did it. And it was a gorgeous thing. Then Simon Holmstrom scores another gorgeous goal. He's on a 2-on-0 with JG Pageot, scores a beautiful goal in the second period. And then Barzell, who was the best player on the ice in the first period, Roof's a wrister in close from Horvat, and okay, the Red Wings are leading in, I mean, the Red Wings, the Hurricanes are leading in shots, but every time they make a mistake, the Islanders pounce on it and score a goal, and you're like, okay, well, you know what? That's sort of an Islanders hockey thing, and so I'm okay with that. But then Jaden Chatfield scores, and it's like 3-1 at the end of two, and you're like, all right, if you come out, yeah, listen, it happens. What are you going to do? You come out, you tighten things up in the third, play your usual third period game. They did it against Washington. We can walk out of here with a 4-0 win, 4-1 win, and you know, we'll forget this, that Chatfield goal ever happened. But it didn't work out that way. The Hurricanes just shot from everywhere. They had a 20-5 shots on goal advantage in the third. They were all over the Islanders. Orlov scores from the blue line. Then Kotkaniemi scores just as Scott Mayfield's penalty expires. And then, you know, it's a tie game. They go to overtime. Again, the Islanders get one chance. It does not go in. Goes right back the other way, and Sebastian Aho scores. And as mad as I was against the Red Wings, I was twice as mad against the Hurricanes, because you guys had them. Like, you had them. You were up 3-0. All you had to do was just not let them do the shooting gallery thing. And I know that that's the way they play, but, like, the Islanders had already, at points in that game, taken over and done their own shooting gallery. So, like, they're not like this impenetrable force that you can't stop. Like, you can get the puck from them and do their thing to them. They just chose not to. And Sorokin made 44 saves. 44 saves! And he still lost. And it's like, come on. Ronta made 22. Give me a break. And I was just... And attempts, like the shot attempts, you know, from all over the place, the Corsi four, whatever you want to call it, were 100-38 in favor of the Hurricanes. Just 100... And then their answer afterwards was like, yeah, they do that to everybody. 100 shot attempts? Seriously, they did that to everybody? I don't think so. I just, and this is where I started to think to myself, you guys just played like assholes. Like, that was, yeah, that's it. You do, for the third period, you guys, for the first half of the game, you guys were playing pretty even. And then you just decided to play like assholes. And you lost. And you can't keep doing this. Like, you can't, and there, I hear, see this stuff like, oh, they're on 106 point pace. You want to watch this for 106 more points? I don't understand. I don't want to watch this. This is bullshit. Like, don't play like this. Give me a break. I don't care how many points. Because then you know what happens. The Islanders get 106 points. Guess what? The Rangers are going to have 120. The Devils are going to have 118. And somebody else is going to have 115. And the Islanders are going to miss the playoffs. Like, that's just how it works. I can't take this. I don't care how what pace they're on. You can't play like this. This is the National Hockey League. What are you doing? I'm still flabbergasted to this day, 24 hours later. I still can't believe what I watched. Because I watched it twice. It's just, it's ridiculous. I don't know. I mean, you weren't at this one too, were you?
Yeah, I was.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it's okay. I'm taking a little break here because I got a wedding this Saturday, so I can't go. And then they're on the road. So looking forward to not going to a couple games.
Yeah.
But
you're not going to Calgary. That's true.
I'm not planning on it yet. I think you're right. Like, they did play like assholes because they almost admitted to it by not saying, oh, we played like assholes at the end. this is what these guys do. Yeah.
Yeah.
We saw them in the playoffs. Like,
right.
If you knew that was going to, these guys, they get right on you. It's hard to relieve the pressure. We got to get, stop playing in our own end as much against these kind of guys. Cause if you do that, like, they're relentless.
Mm.
Yeah. I know, like, we all know this about the Rod Brendamore's Carolina Hurricanes, who've been in your division, that right. played you in two playoff series since 2018.
Ryan Pulock said, yeah, we kind of took our foot off the gas in the third period. Dude, you didn't take your foot off the gas. You parked the car, you threw the keys into a sewer, and you walked the rest of the way. You didn't take your foot off the gas. You just stopped playing. You stopped driving. What the hell are you talking about? But, yeah, the way they kind of just throw it off like that is really irritating.
Yeah, it was a little cowardly. And the way they played, I think. And I thought that there were a couple of bright spots again. Holmstrom, Barzal, and Horvat.
Yeah.
Obviously Dobson, who has just been a revelation all season. The Nelson-Engvall line was pretty good for the most part. But everybody who, at least that I could think of, if I went name by name in that game, at least had one chance to completely, like, depressurize a situation,
right,
and just flubbed it. I can probably recall every one of them. every player on the team. And that just, that's a heads up. And I thought that the coaching, like Lambert's coming under fire again.
Mm.
And I would say that, I will say, if they do play at 107-point pace for a whole season, I don't care if they play with skates on their hands, I'll take it. But there's a lot of people who are like, yeah, we got to get this guy out. He's not the answer. And he might not be. It's funny that the Islanders just have a coach after a season and about 100 games now with the playoffs. Mm. And I still don't know the answer with this guy.
Yeah.
It's true. But I will say he got way too cute in the Red Wings game. He admitted to it. The Islanders were playing really well. And then he flips Wahlstrom to the top line. Wahlstrom ends up making two mistakes on one play that end up in the back of the net. and then he gets scratched and Fasching plays well in his stead. And it looks like the Islanders have a stable 12-man forward group at the time. But then in this game, he's riding these defensemen not named Sam Bolduc and Sebastian Aho to some extent so hard on November 4th. If you're going to play Ryan Pulock 26 hard minutes in November, like that's going to catch up to you. Someone will get hurt. The chance for injury obviously goes up with the more you play, and they're going to make more mistakes. If Sam Bolduc can't play more than 9 minutes a night,
yeah,
in a game in November, do something about it.
Yeah.
You can't do, like, you can't coach a team like that. Hmm. I'll say this, like, when the Islanders played the Hurricanes last year in the playoffs, you and I and everybody was like, okay, Bolduc better not touch the ice again after the first shift that he took, right? Yeah. This is not a playoff series.
Right.
This is November. Yeah. You're going to kill these guys. Like Romanov and Pulock are out there killing penalties and blocking shots, taking a ton of abuse behind the net, all this stuff. And that's where I think it is a week where I think sometimes fans are just critical on the coach because it's the easy thing to do. But I think this week there's like tangible things that you can point to and say, what were you thinking?
Yeah.
Here. And he admitted to, after the Red Wings game, said that he was upset with the Barzal and Horvat defensive work.
Mm.
And then after the game, he said, yeah, I kind of looked at it and realized I was probably wrong. So, which is, I guess, good that he admitted to being wrong. Yeah. But at the same time, just why were you were up 2-0. You were playing so well as a unit. Why does it matter?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then this game, it was clear that this team was kind of crying out for a breather at some point. It should have almost been the opposite, where you should have just jumbled the shit out of this team for the last 10 minutes or 7 minutes because something wasn't clicking in the defensive zone and you needed to find something. And Horvat obviously went off for a little bit and my stomach sank because I was just thinking about how good he's been all season, that entire game.
Mm.
But yeah, it was very disjointed from the coaching to the actual execution.
Mm.
I feel a little worried about Anders Lee, more just existential. Yeah. That's more existential than anything too.
Yeah, that's a whole conversation for another day.
Anderson, yeah, basically. Well, yeah, you got to give him a little more, probably to like Thanksgiving, and then we can kind of talk about it. But it's almost like a little Josh Bailey-ish out there for him right now, where like from last season, where every time he has a puck, you're like just pass it to the right team.
Yeah,
and if you do that, well, we can get behind you. You're the captain. We love you. Just baby steps here.
I think there's a place for Lee somewhere still, but I don't know where it is. And especially if the third line is going to be Pageau, Fasching, and Holmstrom, which is working fairly well right now. He's going to have to play on the first line, or they're going to have to put him on the fourth line and rotate in, you know, Martin or whatever. And
I was talking about some of that today. Like his best spot on this team as it's currently constructed and with nobody hurt on the forwards, it's probably... He should probably just play in Matt Martin's spot, but they're just never gonna do that. And that's a tough decision to make. And yeah. like I said, more existential than anything, and I don't want to pull that cord right now.
No. But you bring up a good point about Pulock, 26 minutes in against the Carolina Hurricanes.
And these are hard minutes.
Like, yeah, Romanov, 25.
47 shots on 100 shot attempts. They're just like throwing themselves.
Yeah. Pulock also paid 25 against Detroit. I think Dobson played 26 in that game. He played 26. Dobson did against Carolina. I mean, against Washington. So, Jesus. Yeah, these guys are right. But now, and now Pulock is hurt, and we don't know when he's going to come back. He did skate before the Carolina game, so hopefully it's nothing too serious. But, you know, he's always kind of one hit away from being hurt and for out for a while. And, you know, At first I was critical of Lane, these things, you know, against the Red Wings, people made a big deal about that line switch. But my whole thing was that I don't care who's on what line. Why are you letting these guys just tee off on your goalie? I don't understand whether it's Wahlstrom or Barzal. Why are we doing this? And I'm not going to like. I'm definitely not going to absolve Lane of any of this. I'm with you. I get no sense of what he is as a coach at all. He's like Steve Sterling 2.0 for me. Like, I don't know if this is good or bad. Like, I just don't know at this point. I know his post game and pre game press availabilities aren't anything to write at home about, but that's not his, you know, can't really ding him too much for that. But my biggest thing, and again, I'm not absolving Lane of any of this. You know, I'm not going to sit here and like, you know, put my, you know, hitch my wagon to him or anything. But I will say that this is a problem that goes back to the Islanders for like 10 years. We were talking about this exact thing during the Jack Capuano era. When I remember people being like, oh, Cappy has them go into a defensive shell in the third period. And then you'd hear Capuano talk and he'd be like, well, you know, we got to keep pushing in the third. I don't know why we stopped pushing. So it's like, well, then he doesn't want them to go into a defensive shell. He wants them to keep pushing. So why do they go into a defensive shell? I don't know. Then it was Doug Weight, and that they did not play defense at all that year. Then it was Barry Trotz. And, you know, it happened under Trotz too. Remember there was a game in San Jose? Wasn't there a game in San Jose where they blew like a 3-goal lead or something like that and lost in overtime or a shootout or something like that? So it did happen with a little bit less frequency. And here we are again now. It gets back to, you know, I hate to sound crass like this, but it really does go back to them just playing like assholes and nobody sitting on the bench and being like, guys, you're playing like assholes. Why are we doing this? Like, who on the, there's a captain and two guys with letters in Clutterbuck and Nelson. Why doesn't somebody step up and be like, what are we doing out here? I'm with you. And I never say this. So for me to say this is crazy. Why wasn't there a timeout called like when in either of those two games when
I think they called one in Detroit and then the Red Wings scored like a minute later.
Oh, well, they, all right, maybe that's why they definitely didn't call one against Carolina.
No, they didn't call one. Did not call it against the Hurricanes.
But like, I'm just like, is this like an, I mean, and I don't want to throw this around, but is there like an on ice like leadership issue? We're not like hot take artists here. If we were, we'd have a lot more downloads and make a lot more money. But like, is there like a leadership, is this like a country club thing happening right now where like nobody wants to tell the guy next to them, pull your pants up and stop somebody from getting, you know, a free open shot on our net because we're going to lose this game. I don't know why I'm sitting at home, like practically jumping out of my skin thinking that. And these guys aren't, it's just, again, it's infuriating. I can read the scoreboard too, man. Like, I know it's hard, like it's hard. And these guys are playing hard minutes, but like somebody's got to step up and do something. And like you said, if Sam Boldu can't handle 10 minutes in a game, then send him back down to Bridgeport. Like, I don't understand what.
Yeah, but who cares? He's going to get claimed on waivers. Okay.
Okay. So
he's not playing 10 minutes.
Right.
So you're telling me if another defenseman gets hurt and Bolduc all of a sudden becomes the fifth defenseman of this group, everyone's going to say, oh, yep, he's ready to go. Like, clearly not if he can't play 10 minutes right now. That's a situation that needs to be figured out. And if the plan this season was we're going to give him the Sebastian Aho treatment and just let him watch and learn and hopefully it works out the same way as Aho, fine. Mm. But if he has to play, he can't play 10 minutes or less because these guys are going to die out there.
Yeah.
and the problem is that they will willingly. Ryan Pulock and Alex Romanov. Sure. I think if you told them the Islanders aren't allowed to play with shoulder pads today, they'd say, okay.
Yeah.
Like they're nuts. They are crazy people and they're blocking everything. I don't know. I really don't know what the because they also are supposed to have these role players, like these firemen almost.
Yeah.
Guys who were there to put out fires, Sazikas and Pajot. And there used to be a Trotz used to really have a Midas touch with when to double shift guys. Yeah. He put out Sazikas and Pajot. Or, yeah. Even going back to the Valfilpola days.
Yeah.
He'd have like Filppula out there with Cizikas or Filppula with Nelson, and just use that player as his. I know that Valfilppula is never going to get us in trouble. He might he might not be the best player in the league right now, but he, if the puck comes to his stick in his defensive zone, he's going to hit it off the glass, and it's going to allow us to change. And it seemed like Pajot and Cizikas kind of became that after a while. Then it looks like Lambert kind of has a chance to build something with Pajot and Holmstrom and Fasching or somebody, or if you throw Cizikas out there with them. But every time, it feels like every time he does that now, first of all, he's doing it way too much. We don't need to see JG Pajot and Casey Cizikas. Like, Casey Cizikas doesn't need to take Hudson Fasching's spot on the Pajot line.
Right.
6 minutes into the game. you want to talk about it when there's 4 minutes left and the Islanders are defending a 2-1 lead against the Hurricanes and they've been under pressure all game, by all means. But it's just a little heavy-handed almost to do it for that. And who knows if that's like jockeying with everything too. It does feel disjointed. And here's the best part. The Islanders are playing at 107-point pace right now. So there's so much that can be fixed. And if they do fix it, then look out. Like, this team has shown that they can win ugly, and they've got these goalies. The things that are, like I said in the beginning, the things that need to work are working. They're getting the goaltending. Noah Dobson needed to step up. He is. Yeah. Horvat and Barzal needed to click. They are.
Yeah.
And they're Nelson, even getting Palmieri. Some extracurricular stuff. Yeah, Palmieri's, and that line is needed to continue its trajectory. It is.
Sure.
And they're getting the extracurricular stuff from guys like Holmstrom, who we got to talk about because he's been awesome. So it's the sky isn't falling, but it's it's so just annoying because the Islanders are in a good spot in terms of points banked right now. They're going into a really tough stretch of the season, and we all know that there's going to be, because maybe there's not, but we're conditioned to believe that there's a huge losing streak around the corner at every moment. Yeah. And it usually comes around Thanksgiving. Usually I'm sitting at Thanksgiving and trying my best to put on a happy face, but it's hard for me to do it because the Islanders are 2-7-1 in their last 10, and I'm a loser, and that really matters to me more than this holiday. Like, I can't chew through these yams and this turkey and gravy and put on a happy face if the Islanders are spiraling out of control in Western Canada. I just can't do it. I'm not strong enough to do it. But at the same token, so we expect that losing streak to come, but I do think that this team is good enough that those losing streaks are it's going to be hard for this team to go on a, knock on wood. It's going to be harder for this team to go on losing streaks compared to teams we've seen in the past, last year and the year before that, because before that, the goaltending and Dobson, like the team last year when they were wilting didn't have Horvat. When they went out west and it came home with like 0 points, when they went through the Pacific Northwest and just got absolutely pantsed by all of Alberta and the Kraken and Canucks. They beat the Canucks, actually, so they did get two.
Let me stop you right there. Yeah. So we'll take a break and we'll come back with what could be a potential losing streak coming up in the next three games. And then we'll also talk about Simon Holmstrom and throw in a little extra stuff too. Okay, so come back and meet us on the other side.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah.
Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And now, a word from our sponsors. First is VintageIceHockey.com, where you can get t-shirts, hoodies, jerseys, mugs, and more featuring over 100 classic hockey logos. Vintage Ice Hockey also carries our Al Arbor and the Island merch, and our portion of the sales always go directly to the Center for Dementia Research. Use the code ANXIETY20 to save 20% off an order of two items. That is VintageIceHockey.com. Try wines from the Pinot Project. They offer a rosé, a Pinot Grigio, and a Pinot Noir that was named a 2022 Top 100 Best Buy by Wine Enthusiast Magazine. All are delicious, priced at less than $15 a bottle, and available at local wine shops and at UBS Arena. Learn more at thepinotproject.com. Please drink responsibly. So the Islanders have three more games coming up this week. Tuesday versus the Minnesota Wild, Thursday at Boston, and Saturday at home against the Washington Capitals, who they just beat, obviously, 3-0. I want to talk about these three games as a whole because this could be a disaster. And then one thing we didn't touch on while we were talking about the game against the Hurricanes was that at the same time that the Islanders are blowing a 3-0 lead against the Hurricanes, the Rangers were in St. Paul, Minnesota, blowing a 3-0 lead against the Minnesota Wild. The only difference was the Rangers lost in a shootout and the Islanders lost in overtime. So if you don't think the Wild could come in and, you know, beat the Islanders on a Tuesday in UBS, you would be wrong. I know I never give this team enough attention because they're boring and I don't like them, but this is a potentially bad game. I don't need to tell you anything more about a game at Boston that you guys already don't know. This is a house of horrors again for the Islanders. They've won, you know, what, they're twice maybe in the last 20 years. The Bruins are off to an amazing start. I'm glad I didn't jump on the they're done bandwagon because they're still really good. And then the Caps are going to come in on Saturday looking to avenge that 3-0 loss in which they played pretty well, except they didn't have Semyon Varlamov. They used to, but they don't anymore. So in looking at these three games, like, what do you see? Because again, we talked about, you joked about it before, but I'm looking at three games here that could potentially be a problem for the Islanders if they don't button up and start playing 60 minute games where the other team doesn't get to just tee off on their goalie for a period or two. They need to win. They need to get points. They've been collecting points, which is good, but I think they need to win two out of these three. If you lose in Boston, you lose in Boston, but like, if you can beat the Wild and Capitals, I think you're okay. But I don't know. It seems like, as I'm sitting here right now, it seems like a bit of a tall order.
Yeah. I think, yeah, you just, it's the simple answer always is you want to get four out of six.
Yeah.
But it's important. This three game jaunt is quite important because of what's to follow, which is all of us, things get really busy. I think the Islanders have, I'm looking at this right, starting with that Wild game, I have 10 games in less than 3 weeks, so like 10 in 19 days or 20 days.
Very packed schedule until the early December.
It gets crazy because their trip through Alberta and the Pacific Northwest is four games in six nights. So
we'll talk about that next week. Yep.
Yeah, and that looming on the horizon means that you need to put some points in your pocket before you go out there.
Okay.
Like, you can't, this team, if they go out there, worst case scenario, they go out there 5-5-3, they could come home in a ton of trouble. So it's weird to say it like this, but that Wild game is so important just because it will alleviate some of that pressure that they're going to face next week. And you know, this is a team that of course doesn't get any too much media coverage, but when they go out to Vancouver,
oh boy.
Yeah. So that's going to be a situation.
Who are playing lights out, by the way, right now.
The Canucks are playing well, and the Oilers are, but like, and I know we're getting ahead of ourselves, but I think it's all relevant to these three games coming up, which is you need to find a way to get 3 points out of this at the bare minimum because of what's looming. You could really go into a tailspin when you fly out to Alberta. And we saw it last year. They went into that Alberta trip last year in good shape. I think it was they had a win. And I remember Anders Lee talking about going out west and feeling like they had a lot of momentum and that's good. And then the first game was rough. And then he said, yeah, well, the first one's always a little tough. But we got our legs under us now, so we'll be fine for the rest of the trip. And they were just terrible for the rest of the trip and came home. And that was, I think, right as Lou maybe had that press conference right after where Andrew Gross famously asked him about how Bridgeport was doing while the Islanders were in a tailspin. And like his first question was, hey, you know, Bridgeport's not doing that well. Does that concern you at all? And Lou was like, what the hell are you talking about? But the fact that Lou had to come out and have a press conference after that just tells you how poor they were playing. But yeah, I mean, I'm expecting the worst, hoping for the best here. I just want to go to bed on Saturday. Like my sister's wedding on Saturday, the 11th. So I just want to go to bed that night, wake up on Sunday and not be mad at the Islanders.
That would be great. And you know, like I said, if they take 3 points out of the Wild and Bruins, then you can enjoy the wedding. You could be like, you know, we'll see what happens with the Caps. But again, like, and this gets back to what you were saying before. We didn't really mention this enough. This team has the tools. They just turn their brains off half the time.
And it takes some getting used to that. That takes some getting used to.
Yeah.
Because when the Islanders went up and they ended up blowing it, so this kind of throws water on the point I'm about to make. But the Islanders were, when they gave up that first goal against the Hurricanes, immediately in my head, I'm like, okay, this game's tied. And you might as well be tied.
Right.
First one of four wins. And then I saw Bo Horvat come out and take a faceoff. And I thought to myself, oh yeah, we got this guy. Like this is a good team. Like, and after he goes off, the Brock Nelson line, which is probably our best line, is coming out. And then after he goes off, we got Pageau, Holmstrom, and Vash. Like we're in good shape here.
Yeah.
So that does take some getting used to.
Yeah. Maybe maybe the key is getting a healthy defense, and maybe getting, like you said, no offense to Sam Bolduc, but maybe they get an upgrade there. But I'm glad you brought up Holmstrom because we wanted to talk about him a little bit. He's been fantastic. And I think this guy is really rounding into the kind of player that we saw when the Islanders drafted him. He was, let's say, a reach, I guess, or a bit of a reach when they picked him. He wasn't really on any boards. Didn't really kind of like grade out to being super high scoring, high octane kind of guy. But you're seeing a guy who has a great deal of hockey IQ. And when he gets an open chance at scoring, he can make things happen. And again, that 2-on-0 with J.G. Pageau was absolutely fantastic. The 2-on-1 with Hudson Fashing against the Caps was also fantastic. He might be the best thing to have happened to Fashing this year, because those guys really seem to work really well together. And Pageau was a bit of a Swiss Army knife himself. And it's kind of exciting to see. I mean, I don't think he's going to win any awards, but like, I thought to myself during that Hurricanes game, man, if Simon Holmstrom ends up with like 10 or 12 goals this year and plays a very defensively sound game and like can really contribute in a third line role in a top nine, damn, that's pretty good for a guy who's what is he, 23, something like that. So, you know, he's got a real baby face. I'll tell you that. He doesn't really instill a ton of confidence in looking at him. You know, he's not the kind of guy you might want to jump into battle after, but boy, a lot of us were concerned about that pick, but I could see now why they liked him, because he's got a lot of tools that I think are really going to help this team. And I just hope he continues, man. I'm a sucker for shorthanded goals. I love shorthanded goals. So anytime a guy gets one, I'm already happy about it. But this is fun. So, I mean, you've watched them twice in the last week. I mean, it must be fun kind of seeing the evolution of Simon. It's kind of cool.
This is a really nice surprise. I remember that draft. So he went, 23rd or something? 19th
something like
overall?
That, yeah.
You know, late first round. And I do. So now the general rule of thumb is that if you're picking 16th or you're picking 47th, there's really no difference. That's why these teams are so willy-nilly about trading first round picks if they're in like the high 20s or whatever. Because they all say, like, you might as well just go get your guy then, because it's there's really not a difference. It's pretty hard to figure out that part of the draft after the truly blue chip prospects go. And the Islanders just got absolutely lampooned for this pick.
Sure.
I remember people being like, who?
Yeah.
I had this guy going 103rd. I had this guy off the board. Don't know who this one is. And he was very young for the draft, too.
Yeah.
I believe.
The best you heard was like, well, they're pretty good, so they have time to let him cook, you know, but this was not a sexy pick in any way, shape, or form at all.
And what you just said is exactly what I think the strategy was.
Yeah.
Which is the strategy that now gets praised.
Yeah.
Oh, Kyle Dubas, he's just going for whatever guy he thinks has like the highest skill level in when he's picking 37th overall, because he knows the difference between picking 16th and 37th is negligible. So he just goes and gets his guy. But when Lou did it, it was setting the game backwards. But when the other guys do it, it's like brand new way of thinking.
Right.
And their development for it was the plan is working to this extent. I mean, it's early and he's looked so good. And he's slippery. He's smart. And he's definitely making Pageau a lot better.
Yeah.
I think like Pageau just hasn't had an outlet to pass to in a very long time. The guys he's been playing with, like he had Parisi last year, but even Parisi's like, let me just pass it in front of this puppy dog and he's going to go chase it down. Now we're starting to see Pageau has the opportunity to show some hands in tight with Holmstrom, and it's working really well. And the Islanders and the front office deserve some credit here. And nobody, I like you, my athletic subscription is retired. It's gone the way of the dodo.
Right.
So I can't go see redrafts. Well, you know, there's a couple of redrafts every month. I would love to see the most recent 2019 redraft, because I wonder if anyone's paying attention that Holmstrom has been pretty good of late. He's Dobson's definitely been the most important surprise and through 10 games, with just like the level he's playing at. I'm not surprised that he's playing well, but the elite level he's playing at has been a surprise. And then Holmstrom just taking the step forward has been quite nice, especially because he wasn't that good in like the first couple of games. He was scratched.
Yeah.
Right. And since then, he's been quite good. And if the Islanders have something here, all of a sudden, like the problem of this team needs more scoring is kind of gone.
Yeah. I think
he's on pace for 25 goals.
I mean, that would be awesome. You know, I mean, again, even 15 would be awesome.
Yeah. I think if you got 15 goals from Simon Holmstrom,
right,
you're like, holy shit, like the Islanders might be something here.
Right. And I think, like you said, him, Pageau, and Fasching, I think, are very similar players in that they're not fancy. Like, they just kind of get to it. They understand the assignment and they make things happen. And then they're what the Islanders were, you know, 2-3 years ago at their best under Barry Trotz, which is that they don't give up a ton in terms of, you know, defense. They're able to keep the other team at bay, but once they get an opportunity, they take it and they run with it and like they counterattack. And I like seeing that, you know, that to me is pretty good. And then they're both, none of them are afraid to like dig a puck out of a corner or try and jump on something if it's there, but they're not gonna chance it. So I like seeing it. And again, I'm not gonna say I'm eating crow on it, because I just remember at the time being like, well, I guess we'll see what happens in a couple of years.
I mean, how are we gonna know?
Yeah, exactly.
We just go off of what we're supposed to trust the as you like to call them, the draft grifters, the prospect grifters, right? We're supposed to trust these guys because they get paid to do it.
Right.
And when you tell me that this guy has, this is a terrible draft pick, and 4 years later, when your test is due, like your homework is due, if you're a prospect grifter, your homework is due like 5 years later to see how you did. Yeah. So I'd like to see somebody who wrote about this and was like, nah, I actually kind of liked that pick. It was fine.
I'd like to get some of their takes on Oliver Wahlstrom, who we're not going to talk about in this episode, but who seems like a man out of time, a man out of place. We don't know what to do with this guy anymore. And
Yeah,
that's a whole other thing.
It just tells you how hard it is to like kind of just predict this stuff. It's, at this time last year, it'd be like, yeah, Holmstrom is probably just not going to work out, but Wahlstrom looks great.
Yeah, yeah. He's had times where he did look great, and none of them have been this season, so we shall see. All right. One last thing we need to discuss is the Toronto Maple Leafs, of course, because we'd like to make fun of them. People are just now realizing that maybe signing Ryan Reeves to a 3-year contract might not have been a great idea. Now, I don't know where they would have gotten the idea that it was a great idea, except for the fact that it's the Leafs, but it's pretty funny. Like, so they had this incident, Brad Marchand can openered Timothy Liljegren. He went into the boards or whatever. He got hurt. He's out for a while. That's obviously terrible. But of course, there was no pushback, no response, no nothing from God's chosen team, including having, you know, Reeves on it, who was praised for yelling at Corey Perry from the bench, even though, you know, if you listen to our last episode of Master Leaf Theater, it was obviously very funny. My favorite thing about this whole Reeves thing is he was like, yeah, you know, I would have went at Marchand, but I wasn't on the ice and I had this whole like shift thing going on. So, but I really would have given it to him. Yeah, sure you would have, pal. Anyway, it's uproariously funny to see this. And now they're also getting on Tyler Bertuzzi's case because he was laughing on the end of the bench while this all went down. And Steve Dangle was like literally blowing a gasket, which, you know, I mean, that guy, a stiff wind has that guy blow a gasket. So I'm not too shocked about that, but like, it's just funny. And then Max Domi hasn't fit in. So the offseason's gone really well for the Leafs. It's exactly what we wanted to see. What did you make of the Reeves flap this week? I mean, I really hate talking about this guy, but it is funny when this kind of stuff happens.
Yeah. And so this is, I actually wanted to talk about the Leafs tonight, and I wanted to bring it back to the Islanders and not just do it as a kind of sidecar, because the Islanders are 5-2-3. They have their flaws, for sure. And the Leafs are 5-4-2. So they've got one less point and one more game played than the Islanders. And they've got a -1 goal differential. And I truly think that there is an argument to be made that I'd be much happier as a New York Islander fan than a Toronto Maple Leafs fan right now. And more excited about the whole season. One, because of expectations, like the Islanders' expectations obviously were a lot lower than playing at 107 point pace or whatever they're at. And God knows they're not going to do this for a whole season, but they've at least, it's so far in just sheer results and points in the pocket wise, they've cleared a hurdle. The Leafs have not. And there's like issues. Like, when's the last time the Islanders had a, I guess culture is the word, or identity crisis, maybe? Is a word.
Never.
You get the point, though, right? Like, it's been
not in the last 5 years. That was what we've talked about before. Like, people used to ignore the Islanders because they weren't any good. Then they ignored them because it's like, well, that's just how they play.
Right.
It's like, when did that happen? You didn't explain. You missed the middle part where you explain how they got to that point. Like, what happened? So, yeah, no, that's the thing. Like, they had Trotz gave them the culture, and they have not let go of it since, even with Lane, basically.
There was a point 8 or 9 years ago where if this stuff was going on with the Leafs simultaneous to the Islanders, oh, that's nothing. Like, has your GM made your goalie cry in an arbitration case? like, there's a lot of funky stuff that I've seen. This is, you know, nothing. And now I look at it like, damn, I can't imagine the Islanders having to deal with this kind of stuff. If Sam Bolduc got can openered by Brad Marchand, Alex Romanov would have put him through the glass. And oh, Alex Romanov, I don't know if he could pick Sam Bolduc out of a lineup. I think if they were online with each other at a coffee shop in Garden City, they just might not recognize each other.
I mean, Scott Mayfield was like, he was hurt or something in that Hurricanes game, and he still went after a bunch of people just because he didn't like the way they were looking at him. It's just, that's definitely not a problem.
And so this kind of, and this has been a theme with this team forever, which is great that they're basically just called a bunch of, you know, wusses by Nick Kyprios once a week.
It's true. Mike is not lying at all. No, listen to Kipper and Bourne.
The Friday episode, the Leafs Hour, the Friday episode is absolutely worth listening to right now. Like, go back, listen to that, and then come back to me. Okay, welcome back. So, so after Kyprios calls these guys out on Friday for just being absolute wet blankets, had some great lines about Tavares, about Marner and Matthews, and just there being no leadership in the room. All these things that when he's talking about them, I'm just like, the Islanders have all this, and it's nice. You can't feel it. You can't put it on a blob chart. You can't put it on a bar chart, but it's there. You know it's there, like a spirit in the afterworld. Like you can, you just know he's there and he's looking after you. There's something in the walls in the Islanders' room. And so then Saturday night they go out and they lay an absolute egg to the Sabres, who are the second night of a back to back. They lose 6-4, play terribly. Joseph Woll, who was Carey Price last week, turned into Ken Reggett this week, and no one's talking about him being the early season Vezina trophy winner. And it's just, now it's starting to spiral. And while the Islanders are spiraling a little bit execution wise, this Leaf spiral is everything. They're not playing well.
Yeah.
They all hate each other. Justin Bourne says something on that show, which I actually think is great. And I've had such a hard time putting it to words, and he did it for me, which was that the Maple Leafs are two teams. Yeah. There are the core four guys, Morgan Rielly, and then there's the rest of them, the guys who get to play with those guys. And that's how this team is viewed by the rest of the league. Like, there's two very different teams here. They play like that. And it's true. Like, there's something completely toxic in that water. And it's so nice to watch and listen to these guys trying to figure it out. And meanwhile, we've just been saying it for a while. Yeah, these guys are cringe. Like, if you took a step back and took your Maple Leafs jersey off, if you took your Boris Mironov Maple Leafs jersey off and just watched Mitch Marner play, you'd be like, God, I would hate that guy. And not like in the, man, I would hate to play against Cal Clutterbuck way. It's the, I would hate that guy because of the way he acts like a petulant child on the ice. It's been so much fun to watch these guys realize this after years and years of putting up.
I love
them.
When they're like, you know, well, Tavares talked after the game, but he didn't say anything. And like, you know, oh, he's just so robotic. Why bother asking him anything? Like, dude, you guys didn't figure that out before? Like, what did you think it was going to be?
He almost gets a pass sometimes.
Right.
Well, where's the leadership going to come from? Because it ain't coming from, it's not going to come from Willie. And it's not going to come. And, you know, Tavares is just not kind of his style.
Yeah.
That's the captain, man.
What is he wearing the C for? But
he's your captain. And in that video, too, you can see Tavares just like looking forward as Marchand is yapping away and Bertuzzi's laughing. And Tavares is just like downloading information like the robot he is. And
because he's
been really nice.
He's heard all this before and he just walks away. Like, that's what he does. And it's just like, that's fine. I would probably walk away too. But like, dude, you're the captain of the team. But it is funny that they're just like, ugh, yeah, there's no point in saying anything. He's such a robot. It doesn't really matter.
So, and if you remember last year, the Leafs had like a swoon at this point of the year.
Yeah.
But it was very clear, like, this is a good team. Like, they're going to kick themselves out of it. I'm not sure this year. Like, they're not good. Like, this team, their defense is terrible.
Yeah, Klingberg also taking a lot of heat.
Klingberg is horrible.
Yeah, he's been terrible.
Their Domi's terrible. Man, it could get really bad there. And I might go up. If there's a chance, like, the Leafs get eliminated before the regular season ends, and let's just say, like, the Blue Jackets are in town, and if the Leafs lose on Hockey Night in Canada, they're out, I would drive up to Toronto I don't even know if I'd go to the game. I would just go. And if they win, I just get in my car and drive home. And if they lose, I would just be in Maple Leafs Plaza.
That would be tempting fate too much for me. That would be spitting in the face of the hockey gods. I could not do that. But
it depends. Yeah, with that team. Not with that. Yeah, that's what that team does. They chanted, "We want Florida."
Yeah, that is all true. That.
Like, yeah, that is so true. It's just, yeah, it's a little different. If it was like, you know, the Senators or something, I would never do it. But
yeah,
I'm not too afraid that the hockey hockey gods, I don't think, hold the Leafs in high favor, right, with the way that they've acted.
I hope not. But yeah, that was one great takeaway from Saturday night, was that the Rangers lost, the Leafs lost, the Penguins were playing the Sharks, so they won 10-2, so they couldn't lose. But I think the Caps also may have lost that night too. So it turned out to not be – oh, no, the Devils lost, I think, that night or the night before. So, you know, it turned out to not really be the worst, you know, in the standings-wise for the Islanders.
I apologize. I forgot the best part of that Leafs Saturday night was that in Hockey Night in Canada, during the headline segment with Elliot Friedman, which is usually about, like, trade news and whatever, the first vignette was had a lower third bar, and it just said, "Maple Leafs demand they stand up for one another."
Because that's definitely how that works.
Yeah.
I demand you stand again? Up for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's – they had, like, an all-hands meeting with Tree Living and the coach, and we're in a good place there.
Yeah. So you got to run it up the board. You got to talk to this guy. Like, your team either has it or they don't. Like, they're either tough or they're not. And I don't mean like they go to run around punching people, like, you know, a slap shot style. Like, the Islanders have it. Like, they're not, you know, listen, this is a flawed team. We get it. They're not nearly as talented as most teams in the league. But if you come for one of them, you're going to have a lot of other guys in blue and orange on your ass. Like, there's no question about that. Yeah.
You're going to also have their deli guy coming, screaming at you. Like,
oh my God,
it's
if you do it at home, you have 17,000 people chanting for your death, you know, like, so it's crazy, but it is true. So, well, we will have to watch and see and hope that the Leafs continue to melt down, and hopefully Ryan.
They've got a tough week this week too. Like, they've got the Lightning and Senators Monday, Wednesday. So,
oh, nice.
Islander off nights won't be off nights for me.
Cool. My favorite thing too, one quick, real quick thing about Reeds is people are like, well, you know, at 1.5 or 1.3 million a year, the contract is easily variable in the AHL. You think Ryan Reeves is going to go down to the AHL willingly? I mean, from all accounts, he's a very likable, affable guy, but this guy's been in the league 15 years. I don't care how nice a guy he is. He ain't going to want to go to the AHL. Do you want to have that conversation with Ryan Reeves? I don't. Like, that would, good luck with that, pal. Yeah,
and you think that GM fresh into the door is going to be like, oh, I made a huge mistake here by signing this guy to 3 years, so I'm going to send him down. Yeah,
he's going to be on the phone with Anaheim trying to get him, you know, for future considerations that are never fulfilled ever. But anyway, should be fun. Okay, we got to wrap this up real quick. Sign up at patreon.com/IslandersAnxiety for ad-free episodes and bonus content. Follow us on Twitter at Isles Anxiety Pod. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and at Spotify. Our theme music is Morning Haze by Family Dinner. Listen to more of their music on Bandcamp and at Spotify. Read Lighthouse Hockey every single day for your most up-to-date Islanders news and discussion. We are part of the Fans First Sports Network. Read more and find out more at fansfirstsports.com. Real quick, we have a new episode of Weird Islanders coming up on Friday. It is a multi-million episode with a returning friend of ours. You don't need to be a great detective to figure out who it is. It is absolutely fantastic, and I can't wait to unveil it. So that is on Friday. Weird Islanders, check it out. Shop VintageIceHockey.com. Try wines from the Pinot Project. Michael Leboff, any final thoughts on... Oh, wait, sorry. Where can everybody find you on Twitter?
The Big Lebowski with two E's.
Follow Mike at The Big Lebowski. Read and work, listen to his work at Action Network. Any final thoughts on the week that was, or the week that that's coming up, and how frustrating it is to watch this team right now when they play like assholes?
Yeah. Yeah, they're kind of like you're right now. I think you're saying it right. Like, they're playing like assholes. We all have friends that we just love no matter what they do, almost. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of acting like you bring one of your friends to a party that it's your maybe your college friends, or you're bringing a college friend to your home friends and
work
friends. They're kind of acting. They're drunk. They're maybe acting like out a little bit, and you're like,
dude, what's wrong with you? Why are you being like
this? Just settle down. Everyone's going to love you if you just settle down. Like, just be yourself. Just be yourself.
Yeah.
Have a good time, and everyone's going to come around to liking you because, you know, I know you're a good guy. Yeah. You know you're a good guy. People will just see that you're a good guy. So just, you know, stop turning the puck over in your own zone. Maybe just punt it, live to fight another day.
Right.
It's okay
don't
to
blow
take
the zone before it's out. Off.
Yeah. Please stop blowing the zone before it's out. Jesus. It's fine. You know, mix in a water and let me slap you in the face.
Right.
And you'll snap out of it, and everybody here is going to love you.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a perfect analogy. Perfect analogy. Yeah. Walking around saying he's a good guy. He's just going through some stuff.
Yeah. You just got to get to know him.
Yeah. Once you get to know him, it's fine.
Once you get to know him, like you'll see, he'll win the puck in the corner.
Yeah.
And he'll make the quick outlet pass and get the red line and get off for a change.
There you go. Perfect. Perfect analogy. Perfect way to end it. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a whole other episode. Until then, take care and we'll talk to you later. All right. Bye-bye.